And we are now joined by international man of leisure, Northfield Superintendent Dr. Matt Hillman, who is currently on spring break. Yet here you are.
The education of the community never stops, Rich.
God bless you, sir.
Good morning to both of you.
Good morning. Good morning. So, what does the superintendent of schools do during spring break if he's not going to, you know, Fort Lauderdale? Or, you know,
well, I've never been to Fort Lauderdale
South or Padre Island.
I was thinking over the 30 years, I don't think we've ever. I think there was one weekend in 1996 where we went to Duluth for 2 days over spring break, but that was about it.
I'm quintessential Minnesota getaway.
I take the week off here and do a few hours of work from home each day, and then just try to get rested. You know, when we come back from spring break, it's really a sprint. Mm-hmm. You know, you think you come back. We have a couple of teacher work days to begin next week so staff can get ready for the end of the year. And then once we hit the fourth quarter, you know, it really just, time is the same, obviously, right? Mm-hmm. But it feels like it's going a lot faster.
Right.
You know, mm-hmm. all of the different kinds of celebrations that start, you know, celebrating the class of 2025, there's a number of things for that. There's the field trip, all the kinds of things that end the school year. And we're still doing, you know, one foot in this school year and another foot in next school year.
Right.
So there's a lot going on. And, you know, even though I know that, time is the same, whether it's December 1st or April 1st, we all know it feels faster if you're in the school system once it starts the fourth quarter.
Have we determined an official last day of school yet for this year?
We have, but okay. you're asking me.
I'm sorry.
Can pull up the calendar. Hold on.
I didn't.
Isn't that good that I don't know the last day
is.
Of school? Because yeah. that, you know, I
you're not focused on it. Right?
It's one of my least favorite days of the year because you know, kids go away for the summer mostly.
Right.
Last day of school this year is June 6th.
June 6th. Okay.
Right.
D-Day.
There you go.
All right. So, what is going on? What do we talk about during spring break?
You know, it's really an important respite for people, as we mentioned, you know, for students, families, and staff alike to be able to just get a little bit of some respite and then come back for the beginning of the fourth quarter. But, you know, there's other things that are going on. So our facilities folks, you know, anytime there's a break without students, they take advantage of that, you know, short break to do a lot of work. So Justin Robley, our director of buildings and grounds, shared with me that, you know, they are installing some water bottle fillers in the high school gym. Mm-hmm. It takes a little bit of time to do that. They actually are doing I just saw a photo of it yesterday, really kind of in a nice athletic plaque, you know, Hall of Fame kind of area, if you will, in the lower cafeteria at the high school. So it's got, you know, a number of the plaques from state tournament teams, and there's also going to be the photos of those who are in the Athletics Hall of Fame, is my understanding. Over at the middle school, they're installing some sound panels in the art room in the ceiling. Greenville Park, they're doing their annual refinishing of the gym floor. And you'd say, well, why didn't you do that over the summer? Well, there's a lot of competitions for the gyms that we have over the summer, and so they strategically do some of that annual floor maintenance during some of these breaks. So Greenville Park is this week. There's some LED lamp testing. We're working on doing a retrofit of lighting in the district to LED. We've been doing this over a period of time. We're going to accelerate that with some incentives this summer. They're doing some working on remote monitoring of those lights as well. And so those are just a handful of the things that the buildings and grounds team is doing this week, just as they've got a short break in the window. And these are things that are better done when you don't have students around. So they're making the best of it for sure.
And maybe just setting the stage for some of the bigger projects that happen in the summer.
It could be, yes. Yep.
Yeah, absolutely.
And one thing you had mentioned earlier is how this is a great respite for students and teachers and families, because it, as I remember it, at least when we came back from spring break, state testing is a big thing. Northfield, I'm assuming, is the same way. Got a lot
Absolutely.
Of state tests coming up.
You bet. So we have the MCA tests that will start. We've actually had some of the state testing happen already. There's some specialized groups that test. They have a different test than the MCA that they will do in March timeframe. But the MCAs, of course, students in grades 3 through 11, will take those tests typically in April. So that's something. And we're looking forward to that. You know, our staff and our students work so hard all year to improve their skills. And, you know, the MCA test, for all of its flaws, right, is a systems check. It's designed to be able to help us understand, are we making movement in the areas that we've been really working hard to improve. So we have a lot of great instruction, but remember that the MCA, the Minnesota Comprehensive Assessment, it specifically tests the Minnesota state standards. Mm-hmm. And so the key part of that is that, you know, if you want, take a look at any of these Minnesota state standards. There's literally hundreds of them, you know, in each subject area. And so, you know, you could have great instruction and you could have students who really grow, you know, but if there's any gaps in how you're providing instruction for what the state is testing, obviously that can have an impact on your results. And so our staff has been working really hard to ensure that, you know, what we're teaching just isn't great instruction, but it also aligns with what the state expects at each grade level, and that's a really important thing. So thanks for bringing that up, Brian.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I'm not sure everyone's looking forward to the MCAs, but I know how hard our staff have worked, so I'm really, and the students have worked, I'm looking forward to seeing the results of all of the effort that they put in, and hopefully we see that on the outcomes of the MCA assessments, which we won't get that until, you know, usually get that in August.
Yeah, and, you know, I think it's all about that mindset, too, because I know when I was in the classroom, I was always trying to make sure to tell my students, like, hey, this is an opportunity, show what you know, and we always tried to have some little fun incentives, so hopefully as long as you're having the right approach, it should be okay. It's not a super fun thing, but something you got to do.
I don't know anyone who sits around and thinks, oh, man, I can't wait to take that standardized test. Oh, maybe, I'm sorry, you're looking at me like, maybe, Dr. Mailman, maybe you do, but...
We would usually, actually, my last year of teaching, we did it where students would, because we did a lot of like MCA review and prep, you know, to kind of get them ready. And we would actually incentivize it with like, okay, if you did like certain tasks, you get these little like coupons, because then we had an MCA party afterwards. So we always tried to make it kind of a fun celebratory thing because we knew that we were putting a lot of emphasis on this. So it's like, hey, make sure that, you know, you can find a way to make it a little more engaging for the kids. Yep. So there you go.
Well, it's an important time of the year for us to get, you know, our results and to hear where we're at, you know, see where we're at. And, you know, of course, it's one checkpoint. When we think about,
right,
you know, I think that that's the hard part that we have with any kind that you do statewide testing is that, you know, people look at that as the one measure because it's something that's fairly simple to report, right? Mm-hmm. We can have it on a stick like we had a governor who used to like to do, which that always annoyed me. But,
right.
Yeah. The fact is, it's one part of the way that we assess students, and we're not saying it's not important. It is very important, but there are other measures that we also use to bring together what the total picture of student achievement looks like in Northfield. And again, the MCA is an important part of that, but it's one component of that.
Yeah, there you go.
All right, we've been talking a lot on this radio station the last couple of weeks. Well, frankly, the last month. About the budget prioritization situation with the district. You had a long form interview with Logan, you and Val Murdestorf and Ben Miller. But I think I'd like to talk a little bit and ask you to sort of address. I think it still gets a little confusing for people. We just passed a referendum that authorizes the school to build a or renovate and reimagine Northfield High School.
Thank you.
You're welcome. But suddenly we're hearing, you know, budget cuts. And so can you talk a little bit about, and Logan is doing a great job of talking about fund accounting. But can you address that a little bit as far as how the state regulates school funding?
Yeah, and let's just pause for a moment because, again, a bond referendum is specific to facilities. Mm-hmm. We have a very highly regulated system of school finance in Minnesota. That's why it was such a great time to talk with Logan about that and really just scratch the surface. But I think one thing that I just want to point out is that, of course, that money can't be used for anything other than that construction project. And we all know that Northfield High School has needed updates for a long time. This is about the long-term future of the district, and there's also some operational savings there too, because, you know, we have a building that's nearly uninsulated in a lot of it,
right?
Antiquated HVAC systems, etc. So at the end of the day, when we get down the line, we're going to actually save some operating costs just because we're going to have a building that actually has some insulation. Then, of course, you're going to supercharge that a bit with the geothermal. Mm-hmm. I don't agree with the quote of all of a sudden, right? That all of a sudden we're talking, because that just is not true. I mean, and I understand how people might think that, but, you know, Rich, you've seen the financial cycle that we use each year. We report you know, to the board 4 times each year.
Mm-hmm.
We are incredibly transparent. We have been talking about declining enrollment, the fact that state funding has not kept up with inflation for 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so I understand that when you announce the reductions or the proposed reductions, it can be a shock, right? Because you go from this ethereal discussion to something that's very specific and a service or a program, you know, that maybe my child or my neighbor or my grandkid participates in. And then you get this rush of feeling like, oh my gosh, it's here. But I think listeners on this radio station would know we have been talking about this financial dilemma for a long time, 4 years. And so for what I want to make sure people understand is we've been talking about this for a long time. This was not the first time that we talked about it. We talked about it before the referendum. We've talked about it at the end of last year. So I just want to reiterate to people that, yes, there's that moment when we have that that moment of reality of mm-hmm. we're seeing something that's a bigger picture discussion come into, oh my goodness, the program that my student participates in may, you know, not be exactly the same as we move ahead. And so just to really clarify that. And the upcoming, just, you know, we had over 80 people who participated, you know, in developing the initial set of recommendations. You know, we are in the community feedback phase right now, and we've received 55, 57 emails, you know, something like that. We've got a spreadsheet going with everything that has been sent to us. We, you know, we individually respond to everyone. Mm-hmm. Yes, there's some of the same content in each of those mm-hmm. messages because mm-hmm. the reasons that we're sharing are the same, but I write everyone individually and make sure I acknowledge, you know, what people are concerned about and understand their concern. In fact, I'd be upset if people weren't concerned about this yes. because, you know, we have such great programs and services. So, you know, that when that was those official, you know, initial round of recommendations were listed, you know, in early March, we started to get that feedback. The next steps will be on April 3rd. We're having a community input session mm-hmm. in our field middle school from 6 to 8:30 p.m. just to set the stage for what that's about. You know, so we're going to give a presentation, you know, to start to ground people in the reasons and why we're where we're at and what is on the list, if you will. Then participants are going to go to breakout rooms. And so they're going to go to 7 different rooms. In each room, there'll be a board member and at least one administrator facilitating a conversation where it's called the nominal process. Every single person's going to have a chance to speak before anybody gets to speak twice. This is and you don't have to speak, but right. we want to make sure people have that chance. Then once that part is over, we'll come back to the auditorium, and people will be able to share in a public comment style format. They'll get 2 minutes apiece. Of course, you have to meet all the requirements of, you know, being a district stakeholder like we do with our regular public comment. And then, you know, that's going to be the end of that evening. You know, the board is listening, right? They're not going to be sharing their perspective on it. There's not going to be a reflection. It's really about the board being able to listen to the public. Then we'll have a regular board meeting on April 14th where the board will consider the reduction proposals. They'll have a work session on April 22nd. Now, that's something that's not, you know, recorded. It's more of an informal workshop where the board has a chance to really dig into the issues. And then on April 28th is when we expect that they'll finalize the reductions for this year. Now, at the same time as this is all going on, our major funder, yep. the Minnesota Legislature, is in session.
Yep.
And we know that the news from the legislature just does not get any better, you know, week to week. So this is a really important part of the year because it's the beginning of the biennium. And so the state is required to set a budget, you know, they have to have a budget in place by June 30th. They have a statutory deadline to adjourn on May 19th.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they got a little bit of a late start, you know, so to speak, just because of what happened in January with a couple of elections and et cetera. That's not worth my talking about right now. But in the next couple of weeks, the big thing that is happening is setting targets. So my understanding is on April 3rd or 4th, each of the committees in the legislature are going to receive their budget targets. You say, well, who cares about that? You really should care about that because that's the amount of new money that a committee has the opportunity to spend. And what we're hearing is that many of the committees are hoping for a zero target, which means they just get to keep the funding that they've had so far.
Yeah.
And we know in the governor's budget, the governor, of course, doesn't write the budget, but he certainly submits a budget to the legislature. You know, his initial budget had some reductions to education, specifically around special education transportation, for example. Right now, we get 100% of that reimbursed, and the proposal will be next year we'd get 95% of it reimbursed, the following year 90%. Mm-hmm. Well, in the second year, that's $170,000 more that would come from the general fund. And last week, he announced another $100 million in proposed reductions, a lot of them grant programs and things like that. Mm-hmm. But still, the point is when 70% of your revenue comes from the state and is driven based on enrollment, when they are not, we don't anticipate that, we're hoping that they will provide some additional funding on the basic formula. That's going to go up 2.74% because it is now indexed to inflation. But again, this is back pay. You know, for 30 years, you can count on one hand how many times schools have gotten an inflationary increase to the basic formula. That's the amount of money we get per student. And so our Legislative Action Committee over the weekend, we had 17 people show up to our Zoom session on Saturday morning just before the KYMN fundraiser. And, you know, we're asking people to reach out to the House and Senate leaders and ask for a minimum target for the K-12 Education Finance Committee of at least $200 million. We'd like to see $350 million. And we know that we're not foolish. We know that there's a limited chance for that to happen. But we have to advocate for what we need. Mm-hmm. And so that is what we're doing. And again, the key part for us, that basic formula is really important. Mm-hmm. Special education cross-subsidy is really important. That's the amount of money that we spend from the general fund on required, and I'd argue morally imperative, services to students with disabilities for which we are not reimbursed. Northfield every year, that's $4.2 million. So this is what we're working on with the legislature. And democracy is not a spectator sport, right? If you could say, I can't do much of anything, there's lots of political things happening right now. But I'm telling you that for schools, St. Paul is where we need to make our effort.
Okay. Well, with that said, I'm going to throw you a curveball here, something we did not talk about before.
Knuckler in the dirt, maybe?
Maybe. Yeah. Swing at this if you want to. The President of the United States signed an executive order last week saying that it's time to get rid of the Department of Education. If the federal government were to do that, what would that mean to the Northfield School District?
So I'll take a swing at it, and I'll tell you I'm gonna watch the pitch come in, and I'm gonna hold.
All right.
And the reason that I'm gonna do that is that we don't know. There's lots of speculation, but to know exactly how this is all going to play out, it's a convergence of a number of different things. So there's quite a bit of funding. For example, the funding for special education that was started with the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act in the mid 1970s. So that predated the start of the Department of Education in 1980. Mm-hmm. The CHAP, what they used to call the block grants, you know, way back, that goes back to Lyndon Johnson, right? I mean, those are, now we call it Title I, II, III, IV, et cetera.
Yep.
Again, those are in federal law. And so the fact is they lived somewhere before the Department of Education. They will live somewhere after the Department of Education. I did read something that said that what many people anticipated is that they would likely put the special education funding back to where it was before USDOE, which is Health and Human Services.
Okay.
So, you know, that would likely go back to Health and Human Services. What I'm saying is that we know that that executive order was signed. We know that there have been a tremendous number of employees at the U.S. Department of Education that have been laid off or fired. I don't know exactly the human resources terms that were used in that circumstance. And we are paying close attention, but we also are not borrowing trouble yet until we actually know what is going to happen. Now, different states, it could affect different states differently because the Minnesota Department of Education acts as a filter for most of the federal funding and the federal requirements. So we rarely report directly to the U.S. Department of Education. Mm-hmm. All of that typically, again, not every circumstance, but the vast majority of it flows through the Minnesota Department of Education. So we are paying close attention. The funding certainly does matter. Federal funding is really only about 3% of our revenue each year, but that's still significant, right? Because it's very specified funding. And so this is one of the reasons that the school board has adopted a 14% fund balance goal. So our fund balance goal, a little bit higher than other similarly sized school districts, is essentially our rainy day fund. It allows us to respond rather than react, you know, to difficult circumstances, whether that be a global health pandemic, a real change in the health insurance industry where we could afford to buy down the premium increase that our staff would have had in, during the pandemic. Would have been something ridiculous like a 70% premium increase for staff. And because we had a fund balance, we were able to put $1.5 million into that to be able to make sure that our health insurance stayed affordable for staff during that very difficult time when they were doing, well, they're always doing incredible work, but during, you know, this really pressure-packed scenario. It also does things like when the state of Minnesota shuts down, which has happened twice in my career. And let me tell you, when they shut down the state government, you don't get any money.
Nope.
So many districts have to go out and borrow. Well, that doesn't make any sense. I'm going to go out and borrow money. So to be able to make my payroll, I'm going to go out and borrow, and then I'm going to pay interest on that, right? Because we have a 14% fund balance, about $8 million in the bank, we are able to respond to those kinds of things. And so the reductions that we're doing right now, Rich, are intended to make sure that the district is healthy in a for fiscally healthy for the foreseeable future. And it's really helpful in times like this when we have uncertainty, because that's what it is.
Yep.
But, you know, we are going to pay attention. We're going to read the things, the best information that we have. We will prepare, but we are not going to borrow trouble until we know exactly what is going to happen. Because one of the things that we do know, regardless of a person's political position, we are in this real upheaval, I think is a fair term, in our federal government. And again, that's not a political statement, just it's a fact.
Fact, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so when you're trying to respond to these kinds of things, you need to be as prepared as you can, understanding that things will change and what you think might happen today may not actually happen. So we're working through it with paying close attention and while also not borrowing trouble until we know there's such time when we should borrow trouble.
Okay. Final question. Baseball opens on Thursday. What are your thoughts on the local nine?
The local nine. Well, I think it's going to come down what it usually comes down to, which is injuries.
Yeah.
You know, so with we just can't have nice things.
No,
can we?
We can't.
With Royce Lewis and Brooks Lee,
yeah,
and now Brock Stewart starting on the on the injured list. That's the way it goes, and you got to have the next person up. So I know the Twins have been, you know, continuing to develop players, and we got a nice Rule 5 pitcher from Philadelphia, and hopefully, you know, that person will pan out. But I'm excited. I think they've got a great, if the staff is healthy, I think they've got a great starting staff. I think Bailey Ober is ready for a breakout year. I think Joe Ryan is ready for a breakout year. Pablo is going to be Pablo, and the bullpen, you know, should be fantastic, and it's going to be whether they can hit the ball or not.
Can Byron Buxton and, you know, I'll say it again. I said this exact thing last year. If both Royce Lewis and Byron Buxton can play 120 games, all right, Byron Buxton will score 150 runs, and Royce Lewis would lead the league in RBI.
That would be great. I would love that.
But I say it like pie in the sky like that because it's asking either one of these guys to play 120 games is tough.
Well, yeah. I think I like their chances. I think, again, if they stay reasonably healthy, I think they will win the division going away.
I look at Detroit and I look at Kansas City, both teams who have been also Rams for so many years in our division. And I believe we've seen a changing of the guard. Cleveland's always going to be there too.
I mean,
they're just always going to be there. So it's going to be a tough division. But they've got the players to do it. And I know that you are a fan of the manager.
Oh yeah, yeah. I like Rocco a lot. Yep. I think that consistency in managing is important. Yep. And you know, when you see people change managers, very rarely, you know, does it lead to a substantial improvement immediately. Rocco's a great clubhouse guy.
Yep.
And, you know, you can, that one of the beautiful things about baseball is being able to second guess,
right,
you know, what the person did. And, yeah, of course, yeah, it's one day, as you know, the famed, my alma mater, famed St. John's Red Storm head coach Lou Carnesecca always said in leadership, you know, one day you're a peacock, the next day you're a feather duster. And you can listen to Rocco Baldelli's moves right here on KYMN 95.1, the one, 1080. AM, and but you can't stream it on KYMNradio.net. No, that's a whole other story that we're a little sore about.
Those are baseball rules that we can't do it. So,
yeah, Richard, we just close for today. I really want people to lean into this budget discussion in the next few weeks. If you've not reviewed the list of budget proposed budget reductions, You know, all of the things that are on that list are valuable, right? We do not take any pleasure in putting any of them on the list. And so, but we need your feedback. The board needs your feedback as they make some final decisions. And, you know, the final approvals aren't going to look, I doubt they're going to look exactly the same as they look today, but that's because we run this community-oriented process. So please make sure this is something that's important. You know, this is a time for us to come together and for you to give. I've just been so impressed with the vast majority of the feedback has been so productive, right? Mm-hmm. It's not been pitchforks. It's not been, you know, you people, because people understand where we're at. They know that we have managed this really well and that we're just at this difficult decision point. And so we need people's feedback. Lean in. Make sure you take a look at those things and give us the feedback that you would like to. You can certainly email me, or you can email board@northfieldschools.org. Come on April 3rd. Listen to that really great long form session that we had with Logan. So, yeah.
Thursday, April 3rd, 6 to 8 p.m.
6 to 8:30, yeah.
At the
Northfield Middle School.
At the middle school.
You got meet in the auditorium.
In the auditorium.
Well, and thank you and Northfield Schools for taking such a proactive approach to making sure you handle this as best you can.
That's what we do, Ryan.
That's what you do. That's right.
All right. That is Dr. Matt Hillman. Dr. Hillman, thank you.